Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Isabella Garrido, Jaya Kumar, and Abyaz Karim. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines.
It's up to the university. If they do not change course, a strike is absolutely inevitable.
The Public Service Alliance of Canada, PSAC Local 901, representing over 2,000 graduate student workers at Queen's University, could be going on strike as of March 10th if demands are not met by the university. This looming deadline comes after securing the highest turnout and strongest strike mandate in the union's history. The union formally notified the university of their intention to bargain for a new contract on April 9th, 2024, leading up to the expiration date of their collective agreement on April 30th. However, negotiations did not begin until November 2024. PSAC 901 President Jake Morrow spoke with CFRC regarding the strike vote and the top issues impacting graduate student workers. I was wondering if you could just speak to the significance of seeing the highest turnout and the strongest strike mandate in PSAC 901's history.
Yeah, this is really exciting stuff. It's not unexpected at all. We've been talking to members over the course of a year. We just had surveyed members on strike readiness, which allowed us to call a strike vote right away. We don't release specific numbers, but I can say that they are significant and they are incredibly exciting, but not unexpected. From talking to members over the past year, one-on-one conversations, surveys, focus groups, this is exactly what we saw coming.
And what are some of those top issues identified by your members, and why are these issues critical for graduate student workers at Queen's?
Yeah, some of our top bargaining priorities as defined and ranked by the membership, they include a more equitable funding to labor ratio. They include a living wage funding package, more access to affordable housing, paid hours to learn course content. What's really significant about these is that so many of them are tied to the cost of living. The way that the university chooses to prepare graduate funding packages, it forces folks into stagnation and into poverty. We negotiate every negotiating round. We negotiate up our hourly wage, but the university then for the next batch coming in, they just lower the funding package outside of the labor. So that's why we're fighting for an equitable funding to labor ratio, so that as we negotiate up our wage, people start to see more real gains. We have right now the minimum funding package for PhD candidates, PhD students, is $23,000. I think. When you take tuition out of that, that's around $15,000, despite the fact that the majority of PhD students and candidates are not taking any courses. Many of them have not taken courses for years at Queen's University. So we're walking around away with $15,000. 20, 30 years ago, it was the same amount of money. Folks were making $20,000 to $25,000 on those funding packages. Tuition was lower, rent was lower, inflation was lower. So we've seen over the past decades a significant real income decrease. And that is tied to not having that labor funding ratio in there. Access to affordable housing. The university is in the business of providing graduate student workers housing. We have graduate housing at Ann Clacken and John Orr. This is housing available to graduate students and workers, and we're looking to make sure that the university provides further access to housing. People are significantly hurting when you're making $15,000 a year as your take home, you are living well below the poverty line. The university brings in tremendous amount of people to this community without investing in the infrastructure to allow people to live safely in this community. We're looking for commitments to make real progress.
You got into it there, but I was wondering if you could elaborate a bit more on how these issues impact the daily life and the ability to succeed academically for graduate student workers.
It's as simple as it's really hard to do your best work when you're trying to figure out how to eat. That is the reality. Over the last year, we had to provide around $100,000 in emergency grocery fundings for our members. People are struggling with the necessities of life, putting food on the table, having shelter. These are the things that people are struggling with, graduate student workers at Queen's. When you're having to take on second jobs, when you're having to decide between meals, you're not at your most energized. You don't have the energy or attention to focus on your studies. You also don't have the energy and attention to focus on your teaching. This is not just an issue that makes graduate student workers suffer, although we do. This is also something that affects undergraduates. The classroom teaching and learning is significantly affected when the person who is teaching your course is skipping meals.
In a recent release, the union also accused Queen's administration of, quote, continuous disrespect and a lack of engagement at the bargaining table. Your recent release mentioned a feeling of disrespect from Queen's administration at the bargaining table. I was wondering if you could elaborate a bit on this sentiment.
Yeah, the disrespect at the table has been consistent and constant. The university frequently shows up an hour plus late to the table without prior warning. There was a day where the university spent an entire day in caucus with our team waiting for their response. After that entire day, which had our team sitting in caucus awaiting, at the end of the day, the university came to the table and their one question, their one response from an entire package pass was if there was a typo on a single page. This is the level of disrespect for the priorities, for the membership, for the work that's gone into this, the work that we do for the university. And that's just the start. There has been a failure to address key priorities in any meaningful way. It's not until the union called in the Ministry of Labor, a conciliator to come to the table, that the university finally responded in any way whatsoever to our monetary packages. The university has shown consistent disrespect for the members of the bargaining team and for membership as a whole. These are the members' priorities. The university has been dragging its ass start to finish. It's an attempt to wait out the issue until the summer. It's not going to happen. March 10th is the strike deadline. We will be going on strike if the university does not meaningfully engage with these issues and bring us a fair contract.
The university did not provide additional comment, directing CFRC to the latest update on the university's labor news page, which states, quote, "The university values the contributions of its employees and respects the collective bargaining process. The university remains committed to continuing to work with the union in the interest of reaching an agreement, but has prepared contingency plans to mitigate the impact of any strike or lockout. Without resolution, this could mean significant disruptions to tutorials, research activities, and teaching at the university, impacting the education of approximately 26,000 undergraduate students."
I'm not entirely sure how the university thinks it's going to function with our membership out and with the Steelworkers membership out at the same time, potentially. Both the United Steelworkers Union, which represents 1,500 plus support staff, admin staff, IT techs, this sort of stuff on campus, and ourselves, which represents over 2,000 members on campus, teaching fellows, teaching assistants, research assistants, that the university thinks it can potentially be business as usual is ludicrous. I don't know how they intend to go forward with 3,000 plus members of the community striking, picketing around the buildings. It's not doing work. It's ludicrous. And not only that, we've received and we've been seeing tremendous statements of solidarity, largely from professors, from undergrads, from other members of the community. And we haven't even started reaching out. Professors have, in their collective agreement, a right to refuse to cross the picket line on ideological grounds. And we're already seeing that there will be a significant number of professors who are refusing to partake in crossing a picket line. We're seeing tremendous calls for support, pledges of support, and we expect to see more in the coming day, and we expect to be sending those along the university's way in the coming days. I don't know how the university believes it's going to function.
This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Hello folks, this is Abiyaz from CFRC News, and you are listening to our segment Campus Corner. Here we bring you the latest updates from Queen's Campus. This week we have Shaping Your Career Purpose workshop organized by Queen's Career Services. This will help students explore meaningful career paths aligned with the UN Sustainable Development Goals. The workshop takes place on March 5th from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. at Gordon Hall, room 202. We have Mr. Miguel from Queen's Career Services in studio today to tell us more about this workshop. Hello, Mr. Miguel. We are delighted to have you in studio. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for asking. Can you give our audience an overview of this workshop and what can participants expect from this workshop?
So in this workshop, it's a career exploration workshop. So we're going to carve out very precious time for people to think about their future, which a lot of us don't have time to do when we're busy dealing with assignments and things that are due today or yesterday. So we're going to have a little bit of space to think about what do we want to do in the future, maybe after graduation. And we start by going over a few key ideas and theories about how to face uncertainty with a sense of hope, and about learning to adopt a design thinking mindset in life planning. That's the foundation that we work from. And then we will look backwards and inwards, thinking about who each person is, you know, what experiences have you had and what you've learned about yourself that will inform the future decisions. And then we look forwards, looking at possibilities. And we start, you know, very broad and abstract, and we get more and more focused and concrete throughout the whole workshop. And in the end, we kind of arrive at some next steps of where a person can go to move forward and exploring the career possibilities.
That sounds amazing. I'm a Queen student, and I can say that sometimes I'm very confused about choosing my future career path. Jumping to the sustainability aspect of the whole workshop, why is it important for students to align their careers with the UN Sustainable Development Goals?
I think it's a very powerful reframe. So a lot of the time when I talk to people about careers, they tend to have a limited focus of what's possible. They think about what are the most common degrees options. If you're studying politics, you might think everyone becomes a lawyer. Or people often focus just on what their parents do, and they only think they have a few possibilities. But the SDGs switch our way of thinking and get us to think more broadly, using a bit of a challenge mindset, thinking about what does the world need, what's important, what opportunities are there, what aligns with my values. And that framework, like, it's a vetted, internationally developed framework, the SDG framework, that many, many countries have all agreed to. But the problem with that framework is it's a bit abstract. So if you look at it and it says no poverty or clean energy, it's hard for you to go outside today and go do no poverty. But that's where the workshop and the website that we've made, the UN SDG Career Guide, are meant to take us from abstract ideas into concrete possibilities and actions. And so through both the website and the workshop, we have people look at possible job titles, possible next steps, possible ways to get involved. And all of this gets us thinking, instead of about problems or fears, about positive psychology related powerful concepts, like what your values are, what your strengths are. And we tend to be more intrinsically motivated when we're connected to something that is larger than ourselves, with a bit of a sense of purpose or meaning. It can usually lead to better mental health, as well as success. We tend to do better when we care about something. We probably try harder, are more curious, we'll take risks talking to people about it, and usually be more successful if we're invested in something.
That sounds wonderful, actually. So how can students apply what they learn in this session and make real impacts in their careers?
The whole thing is meant to be very applicable to real life. It's all about thinking about what's next and what do they want, not about me or anyone else telling them what they should be doing. So to get a sense of direction for themselves and self-authorship. And so we zoom out, get them to think about the big picture, and then slowly move forward into next steps and possibilities. So they should come out of it with concrete next steps that they can do. It couldn't be more practical in terms of where do they go from the workshop.
Right. So speaking of that, can you share some practical tools or strategies that students will take away from this workshop?
Sure. Yeah. Beyond the ideas at the beginning that people have said are quite powerful and help them feel hopeful in terms of facing the world and taking action on it, there's a couple of strategies / tools that we use in it. One, we do mind mapping as a way of thinking about a complex subject. And we'll do that, and they get to take that home with them, and they can use that technique in other places. And the other one is an idea of prototyping that comes from design thinking as well, where they'll be developing a few different prototypes, multiple prototypes, related to future possibilities, not just one, to open up their thinking and get them reacting to something more concrete. And then the last tool would just be the SDG Career Guide website that we'll be working with people during the workshop, but they can obviously go and look at that before and after as well.
Great. So the last question for the segment, how can students sign up for the workshop, and is there any deadline to register?
Yeah, so it's pretty easy to go to our website, careers.queensu.ca for career services. Go there and they log into our portal, My Career, and then underneath events and workshops, there's a calendar, they click on it, register. The workshop is on Wednesday, March 5th, 12 till 2 p.m., and it's in Gordon Hall, room 302. And you can register right up until the workshop starts. If you hear this interview on Monday and you think about it on Tuesday, you can still register. And also on that calendar of events, I want to point out one other related thing. If you're interested in this workshop on Work with Impact, we have a panel that is happening on March 26th, the Work with Impact Alumni Panel and Reception. It's celebrating the launch of the website. And there's going to be a bunch of interesting alumni there. The principal is going to say some things as well for closing remarks, but it's going to be thinking about social impact, career possibilities, and hearing from alumni and their inspiring journeys.
That sounds great. Thank you, Mr. Miguel, for joining us in studio today and sharing your insightful views on career paths in general and the upcoming workshop. I wish you all the best, and I hope you have a really impactful session.
Thank you. Pleasure meeting with you.
Same. And that's a wrap. Folks, we were in conversation with Mr. Miguel from Queen's Career Services, and they're organizing a workshop on shaping careers with purpose and alignment with the UN Sustainable Development Goals. I'm Abiyaz from CFRC News, and you are listening to our segment Campus Corner. Here we bring you the latest updates from Queen's Campus. Stay tuned for more updates. Over to Isabella for sports after.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. After a frigid weekend, we are in store for slightly warmer conditions this week, starting with Monday, March 3rd, daytime high of -2 with a 60% chance of flurries, dropping down to -5 overnight. Tuesday, March 4th, warmer weather, 2-degree high with a 40% chance of precipitation, staying consistent into the evening hours. Wednesday, March 5th, 7 degrees with periods of rain throughout the day, and dependent on the forecast, some are predicting the possibility of an afternoon thunder shower on Wednesday, March 5th, dropping down to 0 overnight. Thursday, March 6th, we're going to see a daytime high of 1 degree with a 60% chance of flurries or rain showers, dropping down to minus 8 overnight. Friday, March 7th, daytime high of 1 degree with a mix of sun and cloud, dropping down to minus 6 overnight. Moving into the weekend now, Saturday, March 8th, daytime high of minus 1 with a mix of sun and cloud. Sunday, March 9th, going to be slightly warmer, just above 0 with a daytime high of 1 in that mix of sun and cloud. And then Monday, March 10th, we're going to see a daytime high of 4 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud. This is Jesse Bell with the City of Kingston Traffic Report for the week of Monday, March 3rd, 2025. Reduced load restrictions are in effect in Kingston as of March 1st. Heavy trucks and loads are restricted on city roads where posted. These restrictions help reduce damage to roads in the spring. The ban on overnight street parking in Kingston will remain in effect due to extended snow cleanup and forecasted winter weather. The ban will be in effect until Friday, March 7th, at which time the city will reevaluate snow removal operations and weather conditions. While the ban is in place, parking on all city streets is prohibited between the hours of 1 a.m. and 7 a.m. and from 12 a.m. to 7 a.m. on the streets that surround Kingston General Hospital. Vehicles parked on the street overnight during a ban are subject to being ticketed or towed. The ban will remain in place until the city deems it no longer necessary. When the ban is revoked, notice will be posted on the City of Kingston website. Here are some relevant road closures for the week. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. And Albert Street, Princess 2 486 Albert is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Other delays, Front Road Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Please be aware of lane shifts, traffic speed limits, and share the lane signage. And Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence, expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue.
Hello again, this is Henry Walker bringing you this week's events calendar. Coming up on Monday, both One-Eyed Jacks and The Brass will host their weekly trivia night starting at 7 and 7:45 respectively. Also on Monday, Riverhead Brewing Company will host their Lager and Joggers running group with their run starting at 5:30 p.m. On Tuesday, Daft Brewing is hosting a Euchre Night starting at 7 p.m. The Kingston Public Market is open from 8:30 to 4 p.m. at Springer Market Square. And also on Tuesday, the Lululemon Weekly Fun Run will meet at 270 Princess Street from 5:30 to 7 p.m. On Wednesday, folks can head down to Musiki, which is hosting its weekly life drawing event. Don't forget to bring your own art supplies and $5 and participate in uninstructed life drawing. One-Eyed Jats will be hosting Board Game Night starting at 7. Also on Wednesday, the Grad Club will be hosting the Open Stage Drag Show starting at 8 p.m. Those interested in performing should arrive before 7:45 or during intermission around 9 p.m. Performance slots are first come, first serve. Also on Wednesday, Daft Brewing and Something in the Water will host their trivia nights, both starting at 7 p.m. On Thursday, the Kingston Public Market is open from 8:30 to 4 p.m. in Springer Market Square. Also on Thursday, the Out in Front Weekly Run Group has a public run starting downtown at 6:15 p.m. in front of Runner's Choice. All people are invited regardless of ability, sex, sexual orientation, or gender identity. On Friday, the Buckle and Daft Brewing will host their weekly free karaoke nights. Doors open at 9. On Saturday, the Kingston Public Market runs at Springer Market Square starting at 8:30 a.m. On Sunday morning, the Runner's Choice Lawn Run starts downtown outside their store at 8:20 a.m. All ages and paces are welcome. Fraggle Rock Live, presented by the Jim Henson Company, is being held at the Grand Theater at 3:30. Tickets are available for around $29 to $39. And finally, the Memorial Center Farmers Market will take place from 9 to 1 p.m. at Memorial Center. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Hello, I'm Henry Walker, CFRC intern from the Queen's Department of History. Here's today's concert and events calendar. Starting with concerts, coming up on Monday, the Club of the RCHA will be the venue for the Kingston Jazz Society's weekly jam, this week featuring artists Oscar Evans and Michael Broadhead, starting at 4:30 p.m. Also on Monday, the jazz trio The Morning Doves will be playing at Musiki starting at 8 p.m. As usual, this Tuesday, the RCHA will be hosting Tom's Tuesday Afternoon Happy Hour Jam starting at 4. Also on Tuesday, Musiki will be running their open mic from 8 to 11 p.m. Next up on Wednesday, the Vancouver Chamber Choir will be performing at the Isabel from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Tickets for this performance are available online between $15 and $45. Also on Wednesday, the country group Whiskey Smoke will be playing at the Buckle starting at 7:30. Folks can also head over to Hotel Wolf Island, which is hosting its weekly open mic starting at 8:30. On Thursday, Trailer Swift Band will be playing at the Buckle from 8 to 11. The John McLeod Band will also be playing, this time at the club at the RCHA from 7 to 11. And earlier in the evening, the group Clear Breeze will be playing at Hotel Wolf Island from 6 to 9 p.m. Also on Thursday, both Susan Natal and Matt McKenzie will be performing at Musiki from 8 to 11 p.m. On Friday, the International Women's Day Showcase, an event co-hosted by Miss Emily with support from CFRC Music, is being held at the Broom Factory from 7 to 10 p.m. The event, with tickets costing around $20, will feature performances from Savannah Shea, Julia Finnegan, Kira Daniel, and Clara Smallman. The spectators will be playing at the RCHA from 8 onwards. There was a $5 door charge. Folks can also head over to Hotel Wolf Island to catch Shuffle Demons, who will be playing from 8:30 to 10:30. Tickets are costing around $46.24. Also on Friday, Gerald McGrath will be playing at 9 p.m. at Tiernanog. And the Royal Tavern will be having Simon Webb performing from 7 to 5, and later band Sweet Pete and the Heat from 9 p.m. onwards. Next up on Saturday, band Cadillac Rumble is playing at the Buckle from 9 to 12:30 p.m. Also, Brass Over Tea Kettle will be playing at Daft Brewing 8 p.m. onwards, kicking off the weekend before March break. $46.50 will get folks into the Spire on Saturday to see Outskirts, Eric Urin, Megan Ball, who will kick off stuff at 8 p.m. Also on Saturday, No Limits will be playing some classic rock covers at Tiernanog at 9. And on Sunday, the folk singer-songwriter duo Bad Fortune will be performing from 2 to 5 p.m. at Daft Brewing. Have a concert you would like to add to our online and on-air concert calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.